All right, well, hello and good morning. I think it's about that time to get started. Appreciate you all sticking around and showing up for second day of presentations. We get this started off. We have a production presentation followed by a series of technology and technology adaptation presentations. So let me go ahead and get rolling.
Good morning. Thank you, John. I'm Don Shirley with the University of Georgia, and I want to present to you this morning some work that has been done on controlling glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth, or pigweed, using a heavy rye cover crop. I want to recognize my co-authors, Amanda Smith, who is an ag econ colleague of mine, Stanley Culpepper, who is here. Stanley's a weed scientist with the University of Georgia Extension, and Bob Nichols. Bob is the research director, one of the research directors for Cotton Incorporated. This is what glyphosate resistance looks like in cotton if you let the Palmer amaranth get away. How many of you have seen something like this or have it in your area? Yeah. This is what it looks like if it gets away from you. And Stanley, that's unharvestable. Yeah. So you pretty much got a crop loss there. The system that we're looking at is growing a tall rye cover crop. This rye is 7 to 8 feet tall. And you're coming through with a roller and laying it down. This is a closer look at the roller. This one's bigger than the one that you see in the previous slide. But you come through with a roller, you lay it down, and then of course you're going to plant in the same direction that you're doing the rolling. But you're going to come through and lay it down with a roller. And there's also a spray. You can also spray and burn it down at the same time that you're rolling it down. So you're doing a burn down operation as well. And again, this is Johnny Sanders, who is a farmer up in Dooley County, Georgia, who has this unit. This is 18 feet, as I understand. This is the unit that he has. And then you come in and plant directly into that heavy cover. Open up a strip. Also, you're doing some subsoiling there. And plant directly into that heavy cover. And of course, like I said, you're planting in the same direction that you laid the rye down with the roller. Another alternative, this rather than letting the rye, of course, well, the rye is going to get tall, but while the rye is still small, this is a picture of where we come through with a hooded sprayer and actually kill off a 12-inch or a strip where we're going to plant. And you can see where this is being done. Now, alternatively, you can do this with a grain drill. The work that I've analyzed, those tests were planted with a grain drill, and we had 12-inch areas in the drill plugged up so that we didn't put any rye in there. What you're doing is that in the rows that you're going to plant your cotton, rather than having the full rye like this, you're going to create what's called a rye-free zone. And again, you can do that either like this example with a hooded sprayer and spraying it down, burning it down, and then you're going to plant into those areas. You're still going to roll it and plant, but you're going to have those rye-free zones in there. And again, you can do that with a hooded sprayer or with the grain drill, leaving the strips open in the drill, plugging those up. The study that we're going to look at, we had 7 locations over a 2-year period. We had 4 locations in 2012, and you see those there. And then we followed up with 3 locations in 2013, just this past year. These are large plot on-farm tests. They're not small research plots. These are large on-farm plots, and you have 4 replications of each. We had 4 treatments at each location each year. And these locations, we have the solid rye, like I showed you before, no rye-free zone. We had the rye, in this case it was drilled, but we left the 12-inch strips out, creating a rye-free zone where the cotton was planted. So we had solid rye, let's call it that. We had the rye-free zones in there. But the herbicides were still broadcast in that situation. The third option, we had the rye-free zone, but the PPI and pre-herbicides were banded. So we're putting those down only over that, over the row in that rye-free zone. And then the fourth, the final treatment that we had was our conventional strip-till cotton. No rye out there at all. No cover crop, just putting the rye, planting the rye as we normally would in a strip-till operation. Each of those three rye treatments receive roughly the same herbicide regime. There were some minor differences in the amount of herbicide, but the herbicides and the steps that we went through were pretty much the same. The rye treatments received, we put 20 pounds of N on the rye, and then we put an extra 20 pounds of N on the cotton over and above what it would normally get following the recommendations of Dr. Glenn Harris. These are the yield comparisons. This is for 2012, the four locations that we had that year. As you can see, in most of the locations, all of these bars, the yield followed by the same letter, those are not statistically different. You can see that at the Macon County location, the no rye, or what we call our conventional strip-till system, that yield was statistically significantly lower. And then the Berrien County location, the banded herbicides and the no rye treatment were also statistically lower. But for the most part, you can see that the yields were not statistically different regardless of the treatment. This is 2013, just this past year. Again, the same test in three locations: Macon County, the Ponder Farm, which is on the Tift County, the Coastal Plain Experiment Station there, Tift County, and then the Sunbelt Expo down at Moultrie. And again, if you look at the letter designations there, with the exception of the full rye treatment at the Macon County location this past year, the yields in each location were not statistically different regardless of the treatment. This is the average yield over the 2 years by treatment, and again you can see they're pretty much the same. Numerically, the rye-free zone had the highest yield, but again it was not statistically different from the other three treatments. This is the herbicide program that was followed both years at all locations for each treatment. Again, there were some slight differences in the quantities applied, but the herbicide regime in terms of what was used when was pretty much the same all the way across the board, with the exception of the banded herbicides where we came in with a PPI application down that strip. But other than that, the herbicide program was pretty much the same across the board. We had a burn down treatment, as you can see, followed up with PPI under the banded treatment, but otherwise followed with a pre-emergence, then two post-emergence applications, one early and one later, and then a directed spray application at lay-by. But you can see that the chemical regime, the herbicide regime, pretty much the same across the board. This is the average herbicide cost per acre for each of the treatments. This is just the herbicides. I'll show you the total cost here in just a minute. But you can see the cost ranged from essentially $80 an acre in our conventional system, and this includes crop oil concentrate, by the way, in addition to the chemicals that I just showed you on the previous slide. Our cost ranged from roughly $80 an acre in the no-rye or our conventional strip-till system, all the way down to about $60 where we were banding the herbicides and obviously saving some money there. But for the other three treatments, the herbicide programs were, all three of the herbicide programs and the rye treatments were cheaper than our current way of doing things under our strip-till program, conventional strip-till program. So if the objective of this heavy rye cover crop, in addition to controlling the Palmer amaranth populations and that control, if the objective is to lower the cost of herbicides, you can see that this program did that. It was cheaper in terms of herbicide cost to go with the heavy cover crop, and of course saved a little bit more money even going to the having that rye-free zone in there, and of course even more banding the PPI and pre-herbicides over the rye-free zone area. This is the net return per acre by treatment, and you can see a little bit different picture. You see the herbicide cost in there that I just showed you in the fourth line down there under variable cost, third line down. But you've also got cost associated with the cover crop itself, and you've got the cost associated with nitrogen that we put on both the rye and extra nitrogen on the cotton. And then you've also got application cost, which includes planting the rye, the spraying, all that sort of thing. That was not included in the herbicide cost. So you've got some applications cost, time and fuel and money running over the field that you have in each treatment. And you can see that's quite a bit higher with the rye cover crop than it is in our conventional strip-till system. And again, we only looked at the costs that are going to change as a result of the system. All other costs and all other inputs are the same, regardless of which system we look at here. So we're just considering the costs that are directly influenced by the system that we were looking at. So the total cost range from under $100 for our conventional strip-till, no rye system, to $179, almost $180 for the full rye cover crop system. And again, with the yields being really no different, the net return obviously favored the no rye, the conventional conventional strip-till production. Now, let me make some conclusions here and try to take this to a little bit different level. If you go back and look at what we did and look at the results, number one, there was no difference in yield. Now, you might think that's a negative. Stanley, I really think it's a positive. What this means is that even under this heavy cover system, with all that cover crop out there and all that residue and all that biomass, and with the problems that you think it might generate in terms of planting, getting a stand, those sorts of things, although there was statistically no difference in yield, the other way of saying that is that we can achieve yields consistent with regular production with these heavy cover crops. To me, that's a positive. The highest net return was achieved with our traditional strip-till production. The cover crop system was the less expensive in terms of herbicide cost. So we are able to save some chemical cost with that heavy cover crop. But that savings was offset by those other costs associated with the cover crop itself, with the additional nitrogen that had to be applied, and the additional trips over the field, the application cost, including the planting. So one of the things that we can take from this is that if you noticed back on one of the earlier slides, all of the herbicide regimes were pretty much the same. We were applying the same herbicides at about the same rates with all that heavy cover crop as we were with bare ground out there. The purpose of the heavy cover crop was to cut back, was to try to cut down on the populations and so forth, and the emergence of the resistant Palmer amaranth. Future research could address ways to reduce the cost of that cover crop, get those costs down, or different herbicide programs. Even though we had all this heavy cover crop out there, we still pretty much used the same chemistry and the same programs that we would had we not had it out there. Is there a way that with that heavy cover crop that we could have a herbicide program that would save us even more money than what we've already been saving? Would be even cheaper and kind of turn the economics a little more in the favor. That's all I have. If we've got time, John, I'll be glad to take a question or two. Yes.
How many years was this?
Two years, 2012, 2013. Yes, four replications of each test. Any other quick question? Yes.
Any thoughts on how corn
I don't, but Stanley's sitting right behind you. Stanley, if you want to make a comment, I'm glad for you to field it.
Well,